Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the headline machines get cranked up because Dana Brown talks about Alex Bregman in the past tense. My source says he's also using the Usted form when he talks to Scott Boras. Big Game Gamble makes his triumphant return to Houston. Dana Brown had some other updates that raise more questions than we have answers, but we'll do our best to fill in the gaps. Season in the open, Ben Gamble returns on a one-year deal. He went out last season with that broken leg, so there's some now outfield depth. At this point, I wouldn't have hated to see Jason Hayward return, but this move's fine too. Obviously, everyone is all the buzz about Alex Bregman. The Breggy Watch rolls on, and Watch is doing a lot of work in that sentence because one team seems completely out of it at this point. The team, by all reports, that had the best deal on the table, not named the Blue Jays, was the Houston Astros. But Dana Brown met with the media at the newly renamed Daikin Park. He says that he hasn't spoken with Scott Boras recently. The media was abuzz when he used the phrase, they lost Bregman. The rumors throughout the week were that the Cubs and Red Sox were still interested in shorter deals. But then Thursday, Bob Nightingale says that Breggy's not interested in anything less than a six-year deal. It sure seems like that not only did the Astros get the offer right on the mark, but also that Bregman just didn't really seem inclined to re-sign with Houston, given context clues. That's my opinion. For those of you that are old enough to remember this, but when Carlos Beltran left Houston to New York in free agency all those years ago, he became persona non grata with Astros fans. So that got me thinking about this because he was another Boras client. If Bregman takes a deal that's comparable, or let's say even shorter than what Houston had offered, Charlie, I'll borrow one of your SAT words. How vociferous will the response be when he returns to Houston?
I think it'll be mixed, more favorable than not, actually. The clear contrast relative to Beltran for me is Beltran was here for a few months and had a legendary two-week postseason stint with the Astros that saw them lose in the National League Championship Series. Alex Bregman's six-plus seasons of equity, League Championship Series over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Two World Series titles, drafted, came up through the system very quickly, but a homegrown Astro. Beltran didn't have any deep roots taken. There was no fan reference other than, look what he just did, and now he's spurning us. And for the Mets? So Bregman winds up a Chicago Cub. There won't be the same level of bitterness. Would make for an interesting Bregman-Tucker-Presley video over onslaught of video tributes. I guess they do one per day. If you're keeping score at home, the Cubs are at Daikin Park last weekend of June.
I think the Pete Alonso news is part of this as well, right? Another guy that, oh, is he going to come back to his team? He wants a longer-term deal. Didn't get it. Alonso, if you haven't seen the news, settled on 2 years, kind of a prove-it deal. If Bregman wants to do something like that, clearly he doesn't. But, I mean, this is what's happening with Scott Boras, guys. You keep seeing this over and over again where guys end up having to do prove-it contracts. I can't imagine Bregman wants to do that. Brandon, you mentioned the report. He's still looking for a long-term deal, but this is why I know Dana Brown's why he's not in contact with him. Scott Boras is living in fantasy land. Like, what are we talking about here? We have a six-year deal, a good one on the table, and you're still asking us for more? Get out of here. And Charlie brought up Wrigley Field. I thought it was really interesting that Himbo from ESPN did some digging on this. He went to Baseball Savant and looked at the park factors indicators. And Wrigley Field is the absolute worst ballpark in baseball for right-handed hitters to hit doubles, which at this point in Bregman's career, he doesn't hit as many fly balls. He's not as potent with fly balls anymore, especially if you don't have the Crawford boxes. So he needs to hit like 40 doubles if he wants to quickly get back on the market, improve his value, and get a longer-term deal. So that doesn't make any sense for him to go to Wrigley if he's trying to up an offer next year. And we've heard the Cubs want opt-outs, and Bregman would in theory have an opt-out. They reportedly haven't really wanted to go past 4 years. So according to the environments, which Himbo brought up, Toronto and Boston are the best matches for Bregman's swing at this point in his career. And then you look at Toronto, Himbo did a little digging there too. He thinks Vlad Guerrero Jr., he thinks he's going to get like 10 years, $400 million. So if the Blue Jays are going to do that and they're talking about bringing in Bregman, I don't know. I think they're kind of playing a dangerous game here. And if you're an Astros fan, you're still going to appreciate Bregman for everything he did. But if he ends up taking less money and less years somewhere else, especially somewhere in Wrigley where it makes zero sense, that's going to make Astros fans feel a certain way.
His feelings are hurt. And Scott Boras is just angry that the market hasn't bent to his whims and all his cute little phrases aren't paying off. It's to the point where if the Astros were to still have 6156 in play, they'd be fools. And if 6156 was still in play, other than ego, Bregman Boras would be fools to not have already signed on the dotted line. But time marches on. Chicago's a fabulous city. The Cubs absolutely can win the National League Central if they offer $4,120, $30 million per year with opt-outs and so forth. You know, you throw in the taxes, it's a 5% rate basically in the state of Illinois. The offers would be comparable in terms of average annual value. But if the bridge hasn't been napalmed, there's been at least some burning. But the Astros survived the loss of better, younger players. Toronto, if they don't learn from George Springer, signing a 31-year-old player to a 6-year deal. And again, to frame on Bregman, who's had an outstanding career. He hasn't been a great player in half a decade, but has still been, including 2024, he had a very good player. But you know Jose Ramirez, the Guardians third baseman, who's on a Hall of Fame track, who's been obviously, indisputably better than Bregman 5 years in a row. When Ramirez signed his extension with the Guardians, spring of 2022, 5 years tacked onto his deal, takes him through his age 36 season, 5 years, $124 million. That's a tick below $25 million per. If Bregman thinks he deserves more than Jose Ramirez got, he needs to check himself.
Going back to the Beltran-Bregman comparison, I get what you're saying about Beltran not having the cachet with Houston fans, but I do wonder if in some ways that doesn't make it worse for Bregman, because Bregman did accomplish things here in this city. And if he agrees to a deal that he could have stayed here in the city for, I do think that's going to leave a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouths. Now, what's interesting, the idea of Jose Altuve playing left field was first raised when there was a thought that there might be a logjam in the infield should Bregman return, or then it became should another acquisition happen. Well, this is apparently not just in case of emergency. This appears to be the path forward, not full-time, but at least part-time. Are you guys surprised how quickly we accelerated from maybe Altuve plays in left if Breggy returns to now Altuve will definitely share time out in the outfield per Dana Brown?
I think the acceleration, Brandon, comes in when it came to light. But the Astros are aware that Altuve has deteriorated to a poor defensive second baseman. He played too many games there for his defense and for his age in 2024. Now getting ready to turn 35 in May. There is a balance to be struck. You know, the physical grind of playing second base, diving after balls and so forth, versus the more sprinting and running you do playing a corner outfield spot. But they want to get him off second base some. Parlay that with the confirmation from Joe Espada this week that, yeah, Alvarez is going to be playing less left field. And he only started 53 games. Mm-hmm. That's just below one-third of the games in left field last year. So you're looking to cut him to a quarter of the games, fewer than 40. So to have Altuve there, you have Dubon in the mix. Dubon's an everyday second baseman. That's just adding another crappy offensive everyday player to your lineup. But they want the flexibility, and they're crossing their fingers so hard that Isak Paredes is really good at third base and locks that down. But Zach DiCenzo getting run in left field, they could also pigeonhole him at second base a little bit if they were to try that. And then you add Ben Gamel to the mix. There is zero exciting, other than for a Gamel family and friends, about bringing him back. The price is right. Right, $1.2 million if he makes the team, keeps him under the threshold. Gamel last hit .250 in a season in 2018. Over the last 4 years combined, he's a negative WAR player. Had a couple nice moments with the Astros before breaking the leg in September, but he's the definition of journeyman. You don't want him getting 300 at-bats, but he is the left-handed side of a platoon with Dubon. So will Altuve play two-thirds of his time in left field and one-third of it at second base? They're just trying to, I think, cover a number of different spots on the roulette wheel and figure it out as that wheel spins.
Yeah, as I thought about this, when Chandler Rome reported that they added Polanco, that he would have been penciled in to play the infield with Altuve going to the outfield. So that just made me start thinking, if they're not going to add another infielder, like, what's the plan? Why do you want to move Altuve part-time to left field? And it just occurred to me, Charlie mentioned Dubon, with Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, two guys that get more ground balls than any pitchers in baseball. Maybe it's for those starts a couple times a week when those guys are on the mound. You see Dubon at second base and you see Altuve in the outfield so that you have your best possible infield for ground ball pitchers. That kind of makes some sense to me there. We'll see with the throwing, I think, is the thing we worry about. Altuve, is the arm going to be enough in left field? But you do get a running start when you're in left field as opposed to second base. So I think Biggio kind of talked about when he was interviewed, you know, different techniques for throwing when you're in the infield versus the outfield. You kind of short arm the ball when you're a catcher or second baseman. You know, you throw it a little different in the outfield. Maybe that works in Altuve's favor. But, you know, we'll see. You mentioned DiZenzo. We talked last week about the Astros prospects and Keith Law, and he was one of the guys that Keith Law actually had some hopes for. He thought DiZenzo could be average in the infield or possibly even in left field. He could be just kind of an everyday regular for the Astros if they give him an opportunity. Winter league, he's been playing in the outfield. He's looked decent. But that's what really scared me, though, is his update on the Astros system. He said it's not a very good system with nobody I would comfortably project as more than a fourth starter or a utility infielder slash outfielder outside of Smith, who they just traded for. So that's terrifying. What I didn't realize just quickly, Melton has proven in the minors he can't hit lefties at all. He looks like he might be a platoon guy for you. Bryce Matthews can't hit breaking balls. And then you got Walker Yannick hitting 175 last year. So we were kind of hoping that some of these college guys would rise quickly through the system, but that has not been the case so far. So the Astros are kind of in a bit of a pinch here. DiZenzo might be a good option for them. They're going to rotate it around. Dubon might get more playing time than we thought this season.
Another factor in Gamble, cheap for anyone who wanted Alex Verdugo. He's not that good anyway. And if he's $5 million, Gamble at 1.2, because the Astros cross their fingers that Jacob Melton makes a leap and becomes the left-handed hitting outfielder, probably at Gamble's expense if that were the case. I just want to add on Altuve's defense. I don't know if they were prepared for the questions and well articulated about the throwing adjustments that you make moving to the outfield. That's nice if you're lining up under a fly ball in the shallow left field of Minute Maid Park and a runner is tagging up from third trying to score, where you can get behind the ball and lead into your throw. A single between third and short where you're cutting over to left field, you don't get a running start throwing to second, where batters are going to turn some singles into doubles against Jose Altuve that they would not against Yordan Alvarez or a better throwing left fielder. You're cutting across to get a ball in the gap towards center field. A guy going from first to third is not worried about, oh, he's going to get all his momentum as he turns and steps into his throw. No, that's not going to play. Altuve, I think, will be fine tracking balls. He's always been marvelous going after pop-ups from second base. But the throwing arm is going to cause some problems.
Yeah, but he's not alone in having the questionable arm in the outfield. I mean, Jake Myers doesn't have a great arm. Chaz McCormick doesn't have a great arm. Charlie, you mentioned that was one of the best parts of the risk of running Alvarez out there is he actually does have a plus arm in the outfield. Dana Brown also had an update on Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia. This one was surprising for a couple of reasons. Brown is very excited about the progress of Lance McCullers. I know the skepticism from our audience that's going to accompany that update, but let's put aside that for a second and think about how valuable a healthy Lance McCullers would be to this team should he be able to get back. Now, flip side of that is the bad news that we got Luis Garcia still not throwing off of a mound yet, which would seem to indicate that the setback he suffered back in September was more substantial than we thought. What are your takeaways from these updates regarding Garcia and McCullers?
It's February. It can paint smiley faces on anything. If you had to put up $1,000, does Lance McCullers throw 50 innings in the major leagues this season? I'm going no. It's marvelous if he makes it back. Starter, reliever. If he relieves, you're not going to be able to pitch twice in 3 days. You know, does he piggyback start where he comes and then needs 3 days rest to recover after throwing two or three innings? Counting on McCullers whatsoever at this point, a fool's errand. The Garcia news is more distressing as he approaches 2 years from his Tommy John surgery. Right, McCullers, we know, has missed already the last two entire seasons. Hold your breath at your own risk on either of those guys being meaningful contributors to the 2025 Astros.
Yeah, that's what worries me about Garcia. We're like a week out from pitchers and catchers reporting, and he's just throwing in the outfield. I mean, that worries me quite a bit because I was kind of counting on him, not to start the season, but at least to give you something this year. With McCullers, the piggyback idea, I could get on board with that. That would make some sense. Him is just a reliever, like, hey, go get warmed up real quick, McCullers. We're going to put you in there. Oh, we got to put you in even sooner now. Something just happened in the game. That worries me, man. Him trying to ramp up super fast and then get in a game with traffic on the bases and all that adrenaline pumping. And we know McCullers is a try hard kind of dude also. You know, remember, he pitched with that injury even after it was bothering him. He's a real competitor. So you hope for the best with McCullers, but that's all you can do is hope until we see it on the field. It's just it's a big maybe. But if, to your point, Brandon, if he does come back and give you something, what does that mean? That means you have a top of the rotation guy. And then it also means, you know, Wesneski, does he stay in the rotation? And if Garcia comes back, what happens with him? Is he going to automatically be in the rotation? You know, they're not always going to have a six-man rotation. For certain points of the year, it'll just be five. But those could be guys that could bolster your bullpen. Whichever one you want to slot in as a starter, the other guys can move to your bullpen. Then you don't have to spend any more money trying to bring in more free agents. And maybe you can hide the loss of Presley a little better. Not saying they'll necessarily be a seventh or, you know, seventh inning guy or eighth inning guy when Abreu's getting a day off. But it gives you some depth there, some guys that get you some outs.
Charlie, what's your thoughts on McCullers? We get this question all the time in the comments about, well, why doesn't McCullers just go into the pen? Josh just highlighted a very good reason why, which is the concern about him having to ramp up quickly, warm quickly to get out and pitch. Your thoughts on McCullers in the pen?
Yeah, he would have to be a guy that, okay, the sixth inning is yours, Lance, tonight, and the seventh, if it's going well, that he can warm up like a starting pitcher, you know, 20 minutes rather than 20 pitches. In the bullpen. I think the bounce back issue would be a real issue, consecutive days or three times in 4 days. I would think that's entirely off the table. And mid-inning stuff, I think, nope. Let's remember, McCullers walks a lot of guys too. So you're bringing him in when the guy's on base. He's a walk guy, the occasional wild pitch guy. If he gets back, of course, it would be manna from heaven if he's, you know, pre-injury Lance McCullers. But so far, since the $85 million extension kicked in, he's made 8 regular season starts, right? 8 when he finally joined the party in 2022, 0 in 23 and 24, and the taxi meter's running for 2025 all the way through 2026.
In fairness, when he did return in 2022, he looked good. It wasn't until the wheels came off in the postseason that we knew something was awry. Christian Javier, you guys hold out any hope at all that we'll see Christian Javier pitch any sort of meaningful innings?
Well, because I'm a cockeyed optimist by nature, I'll say more slim than none in terms of the chances. But that's as ringing an endorsement in banking on Christian Javier as I would make, given the recent history of Astros pitchers, lengthy recoveries, longer than we were led to believe recoveries from major arm procedures. And remember, Javier didn't have his until mid-season last season. So at the very earliest, we're talking post-All-Star break.
Yeah, I'm not counting on that. That's just optimism, I think, from Dana Brown that he could contribute late in the year. Charlie hit on it. They've had too many guys that have had setbacks. And you also have to remember, they now have a lot of money invested in Christian Javier. They went ahead and gave him that extension. So, and as I'm looking at their timeline for free agent contracts, I don't think they're going to bring back Framber Valdez. So I think the big picture plan for the Astros is that when 2026 comes around, that Hunter Brown and Christian Javier are your number one and number two in the rotation. I think that's where they're looking. So for them, I just don't think it makes a lot of sense to push Javier when it's really about him being a top of the rotation guy in 2026.
That's it for this episode of Stone Cold Strews. We'll be back on our usual day on Monday. Unless there's some breaking news before then, I think the idea was we're going to really dig into some of those bullpen arm options for Houston. Do us a favor, make sure if you haven't already, click like on the video, leave us a 5-star rating if you listen on places like Apple or Spotify. And until next time, go Strews.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.